You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 560, I think, right? Right, 560. I'm checking right now. I think it's 560 episode podcast 560. This is that. Wait, no, five. Bear with me, listeners. I believe we're at. Hold on, we're getting there. I think we got it. Hold on. We'll get it sorted out. This is episode 560, Punky's podcast.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. We're gonna cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. 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 On a Friday night. Driving in the mountains. Run around, around. Run just through your mailbox, man. Tell your mailbox to town. And we got money. There's a way to get tax returns. Checks and politicians from newspaper. Money, bills, and fancy checks. Pretty funny things about your kids. Gonna steal your mail. On a Friday night. We're gonna steal your mail. Like a family night. People say that we're crazy, it's taking all we love. But when we reach our letters, roll on the floor. And we got money, where the credit gets tax returns. Tax politics from its paper. Money, bills, and cash checks. We gotta deal with chips with your friends. And to steal your mail on a Friday night. We're gonna steal your mail by the end of the night. We better not get caught. We'll be coming to institutions. We'll be closed and shot.
And back to the Punk News Podcast, it's episode 560, and we're doing a all-male episode this week because, as you listen to this, I'm in Vegas having a good time, and you, maybe you are too, or maybe you are, you know, signing that petition for Operation Ivy, or maybe you're, I don't know, taking a band's intellectual property and putting your name above it and selling it for your own profit, you know, whatever's cool, you know. So listen, you can always reach us at, we're here with Sam Barrett. Sam Barrett, what's happening?
I don't even know. Oh, we're loopy again. We are. Oh, my God.
Hallie Blue, are we loopy or are we not loopy?
I think you've answered the question yourself just by how you stated it. No, I'm feeling razor sharp, you guys. I'm not loopy at all.
And more. What is the preferred state of existence? Loopy or razor sharp?
Ooh. Or
possessed.
A mix of like all three, where you know what's going on, but you're kind of like on a cloud, and then something weird's happening, but like it's a good weird, you know? It's like when you've been up for over a day, but less than three. You're at a good level of tired, and everything like is good. The puzzle pieces are fitting together.
No, we're just a paranormal carrot. That's what we are.
At the end of the day, yes.
Yes.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, isn't life just a paranormal carrot? I mean, you know. Sam Barrett, play a tune. We'll come back and we'll hit the mail.
Yeah. So this band from California, Ways Away, they're like, you know, I guess a super band or a super punk group. I don't know, whatever. There's a lot of people in it. They just released a single, and I'm going to play it. And it's called And For a Moment, I Don't Want to Die.
Fucking upside down.
And we're back. Don't die, listeners. Hang out with us and listen to us read the mail. You can always use a podcast at punknews.org. And this is our first mail, our first letter, our first email from Vint. Here's what Vint has to say. A common topic for podcasts and websites are shows that were great. But sometimes when I go to a show expecting it to be bad or okay and it is great, it seems really great. What show have you been to that you thought would be bad but was really good? Or maybe the other way around. What show did you think would be great but turned out to be bad? I went to see Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, and my friends and I were drinking, and we had maybe the best concert experience ever, singing Elton John by Spike and the Gimme Gimmies. That's from Vint. Hallie Bullitt, have you ever been to a show that you thought would be bad but was great?
The only one that comes to mind is one I've already talked about before. I went to see Tom Petty, and I was like being such a punk rock snot about it. I didn't think I was going to like it. And then I almost actually shit my pants. It was so good. Good band that I thought would be good that was bad. Oh, The Rentals. Oh my God. When I went to, I was so excited to see The Rentals. That was one of those things where like, I should have just seen them back in the day, but I didn't. I saw them like when they reunited and they did like a cover of the Ghostbusters theme song. And I wanted to run screaming from the room. It was terrible. I don't know if I've heard you talk about this. Is there like a band that you were thinking you weren't going to like, and then you were like, had your mind blown?
Yeah, actually. Yes. I went to see Nick Turner of Hawkwind before I was a Hawkwind maniac. And the two main Hawkwind guys are Dave Brock and Nick Turner, and they don't like each other, and they haven't liked each other since at least the 80s, maybe since before then. And actually, it got really ugly. Nick Turner was touring in the United States as Hawkwind, and Dave Brock sued him and prevented Nick Turner from being Hawkwind. So Nick Turner toured as Space Ritual, which is Hawkwind's most famous live album. And I went to see Nick Turner, and at the time he was already like 77 or 78. And I thought it was going to be kind of – I went just to literally see him. You know, like sometimes you go to a show just to see the person, like even though it's going to be bad. But, God, well, I want to see, I don't know, Paul Simon or something. You know what I mean? So I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I'll see him. It's like $15 or $12. And I'll see a version of Hawkwind. And I went, and it was insanely – Nick Turner comes – well, first of all, I told the story before, but I'm going to tell it again. Is Nick Turner was backed by Nicky Garrett of the UK Subs, who loves kraut rock. And they come out, and Nick Turner's like playing his saxophone, and he's been playing the saxophone for like 65 years, but he still doesn't know how to play the saxophone, like hit keys that aren't notes and blow into it. Like, he clearly doesn't know how to play the saxophone, even though he's been playing it for 65 years. And it's awesome. And on either two sides of there was the most incredibly gorgeous women, like incredibly gorgeous, and they both played the keyboard and they both played the electric violin. And I'm like, where do you – first of all, I don't know where you find a woman that likes Hawkwind to begin with. I mean, like, you go to the Hawkwind shows, it's a sausage fest, people. I'm not trying to – I mean, that's what – you know, it's the Fantastic Four – not even Fantastic Four. It's like, I don't know. It's the He-Man convention when you go see Hawkwind. You know what I mean? And so I don't know where you find two women that both play the keyboard, that both play the electric violin, that won a tour with one of the main Hawkwind guys. And it was such a cool visual. It's got these two women that look like Greek goddesses like on either side, and Nick Turner, who looks like this grizzled astronaut that's like been through like black holes and quasars coming out. I mean, he's done a lot of acid, and he looks like he's done a lot of acid. You know, when he comes out and he's freaked out, you know, and he's playing his saxophone, like, and he's not, but he doesn't know what he's doing. And then he starts singing like all the Hawkwind classics, but like the songs were like faster. Like, if you go see Dave Brock, he kind of like, he likes to chill out and like, yeah, let's really groove. Whereas Nicky Garrett was like bang, 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 bang. And like Nick Turner was so into it. And it was one of the most amazing sonic and visual concerts I've ever seen. It was so awesome. So, yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Dan Barrett, how about you?
Oh, boy. So the only show that I was ever seriously so disappointed in was Sam I Am played a venue, St. Vitus, in Brooklyn once. I think it was like after a hurricane came or something like that. There was some kind of like natural disaster that happened in New York. And so like me and my husband were like, oh, we have to go see Sam I Am. But the last couple times I've seen Sam I Am at that point, they didn't sound that great. But we always go to support because we love them. And so they're kind of like a band that's like hit or miss when you see them. So we went, and I had really low expectations for everything these days. Well, actually, in general, for the last 20 years.
Sam, that's a very depressing statement. You have very low expectations for everything for the past 20 years?
Yeah.
I thought she was going to say, like, past 18 months, and you're like, right, COVID. No. And then she hits us with the past 20 years, and you're like, oh, man.
Yeah, you know, it's been a rough go for me. But, yeah, no, so, like, we went, we're having fun, and the band played great. It was just Jason, I think he was a little drunk and was not singing well, missing lyrics, things like that. But I would have to say the next time I saw Sam I Am, they were great. So that was redeeming. That was like the only time where I was like severely disappointed, and I left really early from watching a band, and there was literally 15 people in the room, so that was sad.
Oh no.
I know.
How about you, Emore?
I was trying to think of this, and the only two real, like, disappointing shows I've been to, like, they were openers, so there's a band, Dead Soft, and they opened for Pup, and I'm pretty sure it was, like, at the Phoenix Concert Theater in Toronto. And before the show, I tried to listen to the band, and, you know, so I could, like, know lyrics and, you know, like, have fun and, you know. I listened to them at home, and they seemed okay, and then we got there. The first opener I loved. I bought one of their shirts, and, like, the merch guy, like, I thought I paid him enough, but I overpaid him, but I thought I didn't, so I don't know if he miscounted and I got a free $10 or if I, you know, what happened, but anyway, so that was really nice. But, and then Dead Soft came on, and I don't remember anything. I remember standing there, I remember being really, really bored, and kind of, like, looking for something to do, and you know when you kind of get in, like, you want to be somewhere, but what's going on, you don't really want to participate in, so you just kind of, like, zone out. So that's what happened. I think I was, like, looking at the lights or something. but that was really disappointing.
I love that you were, like, so not into the band, you couldn't even watch the, like, you were just like, I'm just going to look at the lights. I can't even look at you. I'm so disgusted with your performance.
Like, it was like they weren't even background music. I don't remember what they sounded like. I don't remember anything. It was just like, yeah. But that's the only real super disappointing thing that I had hopes for. The rest of the show was really good, though. Everyone else played great.
But they had, everyone was going to accept that band. This is from Lindsay. I am just writing to say that I love the newest era of the Punk News podcast. I've been listening since the Justin August and Sound Guy Narriman days. Sam has long been a favorite of mine. She says it like it is and isn't afraid to be blunt. Hallie's experienced insight is a great counterbalance in that she's actually been in bands and has toured, so she's a great pair of eyes for the points. Emore brings the heaviness which is needed to counterbalance the more beard core songs. John is John. Keep it up.
Careful.
John, are you John?
I am John. Listen, you got to be yourself, man. If there's one lesson in life, you got to be yourself, you know. And if there's two lessons, be nice. If there's three, be nice, but don't let people take advantage of you. If there's four, that's about it, probably. If there's four, sell your records directly to make money off them. Don't swap it at the store because the store credit that you get won't equal to what you could have got selling them online. But maybe you don't care about that and you just want to get rid of them, which is understandable, too. Lesson five. let's see. Lesson five is that right now vintage t-shirts are through the roof, so you can buy them and sell them and make a lot of money doing that. Lesson 6, Hawkwind is awesome, especially Nick Turner's version. Lesson okay, all right. This is from Iced 99. Enough Danzig talk, enough dwarves talk, enough World Inferno talk. And that's from Iced 99.
Okay.
Listen, I'll accept the enough Danzig talk and enough dwarves talk. I mean, I don't accept it, but I'll accept it. But there's never enough World Inferno talk. No, I mean, that's a band that everyone should love and will love. You must love World Inferno. It is. I mean, let's check. Like, check this out, man. Like, I was thinking about this the other. I'm trying to remember exactly what I was thinking about. Basically, I've been booking bands about 5 years now, and sometimes bands are a pain, and sometimes they're a dick. And I was a fan of World Inferno long before I ever tried to book them, 10, 15 years before I ever tried to book them. And I booked them, and they ruled, and they were cool. They were easy to work with. They were easy to deal with, and they played an amazing set. So, you know, poo-poo to that, never meet your heroes. Like, World Inferno were my heroes, but they were a band like, you know, never meet bands you like, blah, blah. Like, that's bullshit, man. Most of the bands that I meet that I like are really rad, and World Inferno were the raddest. And they were the realest of real. World Inferno ruled. So I'm just going to keep talking about them, Ice 99, and you can't stop.
Well, wait a minute. Like, okay, so, John, how long have I been doing the podcast? I feel like it's been like two years now. It's been a long time.
Yeah,
like, I only remember talking about World Inferno when Jack Terrycloth died, which is like, come on, man. Like, give us a, like, the guy died. We're going to talk about his band. Like, I don't feel like, I don't feel like World Inferno is a band that gets talked about incessantly. Do you?
Well, I think about them a lot, so I can't say. I mean, I really do think about World Inferno a lot. I mean, the fact is, possibly the greatest show I ever saw was Punk News Summer Story 1, which was out of control, but just barely out of control, which is the best out of control to be. Like, it was an amazing, amazing show, and. Well, I mean, I listen to them a lot. I think about them a lot, and they were just totally rad. And I'm thrilled to have been able to contribute 1/1,000,000% to the World Inferno legacy. I really am. So I don't know if we talk about them a lot, because I definitely think about World Inferno a lot.
Well, he just prompted us to talk about them, so that's one more to the World Inferno, us talking on the podcast.
Yeah, Ice 99, take that. So listen, man, I love World Inferno, you know. It's sad it came to an end, but I don't know. At least we had it while we did. You know, the flame that burns brightest burns the shortest, or whatever. Oh, I know what I was thinking of. Well, no, I don't want to go into it. It's sad. I won't go into it. But I had somewhat of a realization with regard to World Inferno. Anyways, World Inferno rules. Possibly the best band ever. I love them. This is from Jeff. The record collecting segments are always great. I love to nerd out on vinyl, and I also understand the thrill of coming across something cool or rare out in the open. What tips do you have for collecting records? How do you store your records? How do you organize them? From Jeff. Sammy B, why don't you kick this one off?
Yeah, sure. So I'm so there's a hierarchy in this family, and it's me, then my husband, then the records, and then the dog. That's just how it is. So my records are stored upright in Expedits or Kalaxes, whatever you want to call them, from IKEA. So that's how I do them. They are in poly sleeves, and I usually the inners, the paper inners, I usually switch them out for poly inners because I'm crazy. The hazy ones? Yeah, the haze variants, I usually VPI because there's like usually a gritty sand to them. Before I put them into the poly sleeves, and then I archive them and then put them on the shelf. So yeah, my entire collection is insane, and I put a lot of work into them. Hence why it's the vinyl, then the dog, because the dog is pretty simple. He just needs to sleep and eat and poop, kind of like a baby a little bit. Yeah, and then I do categorize them by alphabetical, by band name. So, yeah, I have many, 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 many cubbies of vinyl. It's really bad. I'm sorry in advance.
Hallie, well, you got a pretty rad collection, right?
I have a good collection. I just don't. I feel like Sam's going to lose so much respect for me when I say that they're just, like, thrown into, like, some cabinets, some shelves are all over the place. We never know where anything is. I mean, the part of that is just that we moved and we have a toddler and we just like have to actually like wait till our son is old enough to go to freaking school so we can just like have some moment to like organize. But also, I don't know, my parents just, I grew up with records. We just had this giant record closet when I was growing up that I would like sit in the record closet and like listen to records. And I don't know, it was never well organized. I don't know, just my family, the records are just, they're there, they're well loved. They're kind of, we don't maybe treat them as well as we could, but you know, we listen with love.
And more, I know you got some CDs and stuff. How do you organize them? How do you collect them? What do you do?
Right now I need to reorganize them, but they're stacked in a cube, and they're stacked in such a way so like they won't get dusty, so they keep like pristine and everything's nice and flat, nothing's gonna fall out and you know all that. I keep them off the floor is big. Don't have anything like weird near them. Like anything that could like spill on them or, you know,
like water.
You keep them away from that haunted milk jug that you talked about last episode.
I think it'll find them one day, but until
that's
then
what it was trying to get to. It was trying to get to your CD collection.
Well, it's kind of funny because I got a little it's a little chick for Easter like a really really long time ago, and I've always put it next to the CDs, so it's like a little guardian like walking out. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is no, like when you go shopping for CDs, know good places, know what to look for, know the prices that are reasonable, the ones that they're trying to gouge you with. And if any person tries to be like, oh, you should be listening to this, kick them and leave, because nothing ever good comes from that. I had one person come up to me. What was I even looking at? Oh, one of my policies is if I'm out and somebody is kind of hovering around, I look at something really, really scary, so they leave. So I don't, it wasn't like anything nuts. It was some like metal album. And then I was wearing a band t-shirt, and I think it was Slayer, and it has like skulls on it and stuff, so it looks really cool. And I had buttons with like band names, and this like, I don't even know, person comes over, reaches in front of me, grabs a fucking Metallica album, and is like, this is real music. You should be listening to this.
Really? Say that to
you? Yeah.
And
sorry?
What an ass. Yeah. Like, no dude, would say that to a dude, you know what I mean? Like, what an ass.
Exactly. And it's just like, what do I do? So I just walked away, because it's like, I'm not, Yep. Or I think I said, oh, that's soft music, and then I left.
Yes.
But yes, know what you're looking for, get it, don't let anyone else get in your way or try to tell you otherwise, and Metallica sucks. But yeah.
Well, listen, I'll back in Metallica sucks. I actually don't hate Metallica, but I certainly don't love Metallica. Slayer's way better.
Yeah.
Let's do, I organize my records by genre and then alphabetical and then by year. So I've got rock, hip hop, punk, reggae, soul/funk, country, pop in the terms of like a band pop, like Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, that kind of stuff. And then comedy/weirdo records that like are uncategorizable. So that's how I organize my records. I got them on an Expedite shelf, but honestly, I probably could take better care of my records. I probably should, like, they're not all in plastic sleeves, and some of the rare ones probably should be. And actually, I probably really should swap out on my rarer ones the paper sleeve for the MoFi sleeve. You know what I mean? Because records are extremely fragile. You breathe on them and they get scratched. You know what I mean? Yeah, you look at them, they get scratched. But yeah, man, I love record collecting. And I recently had a heart-to-heart with myself. I'm selling records on Saturday and Sunday. I mean, I've been selling records for a while now. But, you know, I have run out of space on my shelf. So I either have to build more shelves or get rid of some records. And I'm probably, actually, I'm going to do both. But I did, like, I pulled all, like I had all these Clapton records. And I hate Clapton. I can't stand Clapton. I have, like, 7 Clapton records. I'm like, and, like, it's, I've got this weird thing. It's like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, it's the Library of Alexandria. You should have Clapton just in case you want to listen to Clapton. Well, I can get a stupid CD. Like, I don't need the record. You know what I mean? And I'm like, well, if I sell all these Clapton records, then I could buy a World Inferno record that's rare. You know, I'm like, well, what would I rather have? 7 Clapton records that I don't ever want or an awesome rare World Inferno record? So I don't know, man. And what I think I might be sorry on down the line, that it's kind of cool to have, like, shitty records you don't like in your collection, because when you're flipping through it, it kind of makes it more fun. But on the other hand, if your collection is all super rad records, maybe that's cool, too. I don't know.
Well, I'm the type of person that, like, the thing needs to spark joy for it to stay in my collection. So, like, I'm actually going through, like, my record collection now and paring things down with my husband. And I, like, came across the fact that my husband just bought so many things that doesn't spark joy in either of us. And I was like, why did you even buy this? See, and he's like, I don't know.
This is why I love you, Sam. That you're a multi-layered person enough that you can be talking about Marie Kondo and your punk record collection. There's just layers and layers. I'm so into it. John, I feel like I interrupted you. What were we going to say?
Oh, no. Well, see, my theory is I'm going to get rid of records. And then later on, I'm like, man, I really wish I had that. Like, I've multiple times, I'm like, I think I've got that on my collection, and there it is. I'm like, oh, my God, this record rules, you know? And we had this discussion before. But also, I kind of like having, like, records that I don't even, like, I've got the anti-Marie Kondo perspective, which it might be the wrong perspective, and then, like, I like having records I don't give a shit about, because it's like I'm at the record store where I'm going through my own collection. Don't care. Ooh, the Dwarves! You know, don't care. Don't care. Ooh, the Clash! You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And, it, if you have crappy records that you forget it that you have them, well, actually, that's not true. I remember pretty much every record I have. I don't know, man. Well, we'll see. Ask me in 3 years how I feel. All right, listen. Speaking of sparking joy, here's what here's what Jordy Ace has to say. Record releases have been so weird this year that a lot of bands can't or won't tour off the new album. What album was the best one that came out? I think the new Queers record is great. It might be a covers record, but it's still 100 times better than most other albums. The Queers were on tour, and I saw them, and they were really good. They played almost all of Love Songs for the Retarded. Joe even took the mic and didn't play guitar for most of the show. I loved it. From Jordy Ace. So I guess he's asking, I guess he's asking, what's the best one that came out during the COVID era or this year? And honestly, like, usually during the year, I could be like, these are the records that came out. And these are what, like, but because COVID, everything's kind of blended together, and I haven't been seeing bands live more or less, like, it's kind of difficult to remember the records that came out this year, you know? I think Alice Cooper's record came out this year. I'm going to get it right. Yeah, that one was really good. But it's not the best record of the year, that's for sure. I mean, it's good, but it's not the best one of the year. I'm gonna have to go back and look at my reviews and see, like, what, like, the Mimes came out this year, I think, and that was really good. But let me take a quick look and I'll give you guys my opinion as to the best record, or actually not the best record, but a really cool record that came out this year. All right, John, the DFL EP was really cool, but that's not a record. I mean, that's not an album. All right, let's see. Oh, Catbite was really awesome. Vicious Dreams was really cool. Zorn was really cool. F'd Up, Year of the Horse. That was a heavy hitter. So, all right, yeah, we had some good stuff this year. Joe Jack Tackham's EP was real good. Suck 7-inch was pretty good. However, I gotta say, not a whole lot of killer albums. Some cool ones, but not a ton. I don't know, man. It's been a weird year. What do you want me to say? You know? Oh, Rudy P. Rudimentary Peni, The Great War. There's the contender.
Yeah, like that Mimes record. I think it came out during the pandemic. I mean, probably the record that I just, like, listened to the most during the pandemic was the Gladdy album that came out, Safe Sins. I think that came out as the pandemic was hitting. I don't know. I liked all the new Mannequin Pussy stuff. I thought it was amazing. I listened to that a lot. And yeah, what is time? What is reality? My mind is bent. But I liked that Fresh album that came out that Em and I both liked. Summer I Got Good at Guitar. I listened to that a lot. And beyond that, there was like that UVTV record came out. Those were my, that's been all my favorite stuff, I think.
Yeah. So you're talking about 2021 music, or are you talking about 2020 and 2021 music?
I think this person is saying like, right. Just what, like, yeah, like last 18 months, right?
Yeah.
Like just COVID times.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so there's, like, I'm really into that Drones album that came out. That album's so damn good. I'm also really into the Tiger's Jaw that came out this year. Right now, I'm really into the Turnstile. Yeah, Turnstile's new one. That one's really, really good. Last year, 2020, let's see. I really, really loved French band Water Tank. I think I put that as my number one or close to number one last year on my list. And also Be Well. That album is freaking lit. Yeah. So those are my picks for now.
And more, what are you thinking?
So I have a list on my that I've been working on my phone, because last year I was really dumb. And for my year-end list, I kind of did everything in a week. So it's like, I'm going to not do that this time. So I have a list on my phone of anything that will be released. And then I listen to it. And if I like it, it goes on the list. And then it's like a whole bracket situation. So right now, some of my top ones are Fuck Art from The Dirty Mill, Loudmouth by Vile, Going to Hell by Londie Hecht, Mandemic by Culture Shock is by far the one I've listened to the most. Celestial Blues by King Woman is just amazing. No Taste by Bad Waitress has been in spin pretty good. Do It With a Smile, which is Third Face's album, kicks ass. I Lie Here Buried With My Rings and My Dresses is Backwash's new album, and it is nuts. It's so good. So it's like metal-y, like, oh, it, I don't know. It's so good. It's I play the title song on my my DJ episode, so check that out. It's really good. Yeah, I agree. The Great War is just amazing. There's been a lot so far, and there's so many things that are going to come out that I'm really excited for too. So yeah, but right now, those are definitely in the top. They're in the running right now. I think like album of the year is leaning Mandemic, just because that's what I've listened to the most. That and Fuck are kind of tied for most spins.
Well, they have Dick Lucas coming on strong. This is from Tiff. Tiff says, this is a question for Hallie. What advice do you have for getting a band off the ground? My friends and I started a new band, but we don't know if we should play shows first or record some songs or write more songs. We like the songs we have, but we don't love them. Should we just start a new band or work through the songs we think are just okay? 3 out of the 4 of us go to university next year, and we will be too far apart to regularly practice. From Tiff.
Everything's just changed so much. I mean, if someone was asking me this question, like, you know, even like 10 years ago, I would just be like, play shows. Like, just play shows. That's how you become a band. It's how you learn to play. It's how you learn to play together. It's how you learn what's working, what's not. It's how you let people know that you're a band, and it's how you get yourself out there and start getting a following. I do think things have just changed a lot now, and I do think there is a model where you can just start recording stuff and putting it out there, and that people can find you that way, and that you can you know, that you can shape yourselves as a band through recording, but it's not the model that I used or played. You know, it wasn't the way I did music. So I just know less about it, but so if you're asking me, I would say just get out there and play some shows. I think unless you like are really, I don't know, unless you're somehow really good at writing songs and recording them without having gone out and played them live, that seems harder to me. So, you know, but it's hard advice to give also, you know, during a pandemic, because obviously shows aren't happening as often. There's not as many people attending. So it's like, I also don't want to give advice that's just not applicable to like the day and age that we're living in. But I had a band because I don't want to take too long answering this, but I will say the Unlovables, my band existed because I recorded a few songs for like as presents for my boyfriend, some friends. I just recorded a few songs. I didn't even have a band yet, and I just did that with friends of mine. And actually, there wasn't really like a viral yet. We wouldn't have like used that word, but those songs got kind of passed around all over the place, and they were why I ended up having a band. So I think all of those things you're talking about doing, like do whatever is This is the real answer. Do whatever you're the most likely to do. If you're the most, if break down the barriers. If you're worried and nervous to play live shows and you feel like you're not going to do it, then that's not your in. Then do recordings. If you're like, we don't even know where to record, but we know some friends that'll let us get on stage and play live. Like, do that. Do the thing that you'll do. Does that make sense? Do the thing that you'll actually do. Just start doing it. You know,
there you go, people. Do the thing that you'll do and start doing it. I think that's advice. All right. This is from I'm not going to read the email address, but there's no name to it. Why is John so obsessed with label politics? He likes Surfport. He likes to aim on the Sniffers. I think they suck, but that is irrelevant. Who cares if a band is on a major label? It's not 1994. Grow up. Is John mad that bands are getting paid? Just enjoy the music. Dash, if you are capable. the business has nothing to do with it. Also, a label like Fat Wreck has a patented sound. You know what you are getting. Everything they put out is at least good or great. Why worry about the label? Let the music speak for itself. You are putting the cart before the horse. So there you go. John taking some hard hits. Well, listen, I'm not too hung up on labels, but like I said, is I get concerned. Well, actually, no, you know what? Psh, I'm doubling down. I'm doubling down. Here's why, people. Philadelphia has really only two DIY licensed venues. There are some unlicensed venues that are DIY, which is cool. I would never throw an unlicensed show, but if people want to, that's cool. And I've been to many, many, many of them, and I enjoy them a great deal. But there are two licensed DIY venues in Philadelphia. Should I name? I don't want to bring more heat. I'm not going to bring more heat on them.
Don't name them.
No. I mean, they're licensed. They're not unlicensed. They're licensed. They're legit, right? One is relatively small, and one is medium. And the medium one, 2 years ago, the inspectors came on down and they said, oh, well, you can't have this here. And there were thousands of shows there, and not a single person got hurt because of the venue or hurt even at all. You can't the stairs are 14 inches. They have to be 12 inches. You know, the balcony needs a handrail here. You know, it was not a day. So the poor guy that runs the place spent a year and a half fixing the place up, and I don't even know how much money. Not $5,000. You know what I'm saying? Like, not $5,000. Like, a lot more than that, right? Then he gets hit with COVID, and he, like, the venue is like his life. You know what I mean? And this is a venue, no alcohol. They don't have alcohol there. It's an art place. It's not a bar. It's an art place. You know. And like Ian MacKay says, I used to never really care about non-alcohol venues, even though I don't drink. But Ian MacKay said, you know, why should Budweiser? He didn't say it exactly like this. I'm paraphrasing. Why should Budweiser dictate what I can do with my music? And I'm like, damn, Ian, so true. So I love non-bar venues. I love them. And this place has fantastic sound, right? And so anyways, they had to reinforce the door because, quote, noise was creeping out, which it wasn't, you know. And meanwhile, the whole thing was really the area used to be a really bad area. And now because property in Philadelphia is blowing up, it's a very good area or a very up-and-coming area. So it's really just I don't know this for a fact, but it's my suspicion. It's the developers that are literally trying to drive him out so they can buy the building and make tons of money. So anyways, he spends a year and a half, you know, going to court, you know, trying to get through, get through the red tape, doing everything legit, you know. And meanwhile, the place is all fixed up now. And like, I think it was all wasted money. I don't think it needed to be done, but fine. The city says it needed to be done, fine. He spends all this money. He's open for about, I don't know, a month after COVID. He comes in. There's a sign on his door. Condemned, or not condemned, but like in violation, cracks in the walls. Meanwhile, he had like literally like four inspectors there many times, and not a single one pointed out the crack in the wall. And I've seen the crack in the wall, and the crack in the wall is like, It's like nothing. Like, every wall has, like, if you go to any giant building, it's going to have a crack in the wall. Like any architect, any engineer will tell you a crack in the wall. Like, buildings get crack in the walls all the time. Doesn't mean it's structurally, like, unsound. You know, there's a lot of them are built to get cracks in the wall because they're built to resist that stress or whatever. So it's clearly, in my opinion, well, I don't want to defame anybody because I don't want to get sued because I hypothetically could. Because it's my opinion there's dirty dogs working with dirty dogs, and those dirty dogs should really be ashamed of themselves. And I realize I'm being vague here, but it's my opinion that there are powerful forces that are trying to drive the arts out of Philadelphia for profit. Okay. Meanwhile, the small venue, when COVID opened up, and it was like the first Philly, things kind of shut back down to a degree, but it was like Philly's open again, hooray, let's all have a good time. There was block parties, there was bars with sound systems blasting music out onto the street, bars, right? The other small venue had a 20 minute hip hop set outside with a legendary MC, and it was not, you walk three buildings away, you couldn't really hear it. 20 minutes, he gets slapped with a violation and has all these inspections now. Every single bar had sound system blasting down the street way louder than he did, and he gets hit, you know. Either we had a 20-minute set outside at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, everybody's making the news and is hooping and hollering, you know. The point being is this, is I don't care if a band's on a major label. I think that's cool if they're getting paid. But when there's insidious hands that you can't see, or when there's hands that purposely make themselves disguised, well, there's a reason they're being disguised, you know. And is that invading my DIY space? And I had this theory 2 years ago. It's like with the Regrets, with Amel, with Surfport, the reason that these major with the Chats, they're not making themselves known because they're testing the waters. Can we make money here? Now, of course, the labels are different people than the real estate developers. But the fact that there's hidden machinations behind that shows that they don't have our best interest at heart. And if they want to go off in major label world and at Clear Channel venue and make tons of money, that's fine. But when they start coming into my space and threatening my space, that's when I've got a problem. And that's the exact situation Philadelphia has right now. Both DIY, non-alcohol, legit licensed venues are under attack. Meanwhile, there's another venue, I'm not going to say where in Philadelphia, was under a bridge. I went to a show there about 3 weeks ago, and it was rad in that, like, well, actually, it started like 2 hours late, like every or 3 hours late, like every Philly show. And I'm standing there, I'm so bored. I'm like, I'm mad. I'm so bored. It's under a bridge. It's like squatter punk, D beat punk, you know, anarcho punk central, you know. But then like the band started playing under this bridge, and it was so cool. Like it was like Mad Max, you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's a generator with the sound system, and like there's punks off in the bushes doing drugs. You know, not weed, you know. And like it was a little dangerous, and it was cool. I go back there. I was going to go back there for another show, and then the guy got hit. They said, well, you got to have a license. So he gets a permit from the city and says, okay, the show's on, we got a permit from the city. They play one or two bands, play the cops show up, and they shut it down because punks are drinking, which, honestly, if anarcho punks were smart, they wouldn't have been drinking, or they wouldn't have been drinking down the street. You know what I mean? But nobody was hurting anybody. Nobody was doing anything bad at all. You know what I mean? But it's like, we can't have legit venues, and then we do it illegit, and that gets slapped down too. Why? Because it's all in the name of money. And so that's my unorganized, not thesis. What's before thesis? Hypothesis. That I'm sure there's something there, and I just got to figure out how to staple it together. Does that make any sense at all?
John, you just described gentrification.
That's why I get whiffy and iffy when there's these secret labels behind bands. I don't care if a band is a major label. Melvins were a major label band. Rolling Stones are the major label band. Who cares? But when it's secretive, that's the problem. And I think there is a real danger there. Anyway, this is you guys want to do a couple more, or should we wrap this one up?
Whatever.
let's see here. Let's do one more. Oh, here we go. Okay, yeah. I actually was going to do this. So we'll skip a few more, and we'll do this one last, and we'll wrap on up. This is from Jamie. And this is I don't think we've ever gotten an email like this before. This might be an unusual question for the podcast. And we're going to throw this one to M. Moore first. Might be an unusual question for the podcast. But considering how much you guys talk about records, I think it's the best place to ask. I have a curated record collection. All the records in my collection I like and bought myself or got as gifts. My friends will come over and we will play records. Sometimes my friends will bring their records and we will play the records and talk and play Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. Here's where it gets weird. My friend who I'll call Doe was over, and my other friends and he were playing my Husker Du record, which is on purple vinyl. That's a hard one to get. I don't know how much later, but I realized my copy was missing. Then, when we were over Doe's house, I was looking at his records, and he had a Husker Du purple vinyl. I asked him about it, and he said he always had it, and that's why he was looking at mine. But I didn't say mine was missing. I don't know what to do. Can you help someone? Can you help someone retried? Maybe he means retrieve what is probably but not definitely a stolen record that is hard to find. From Jamie.
Oh. Steal it back.
Yeah.
Steal it back. And then if he asks about it, be like, yeah, this is my cup you've always had, man. Here it is, where it's always been. I don't know. That's my answer. John, what would you do if someone had taken your prized purple Husker Du?
Well, actually, I was going to say, well, just don't be friends with them. But like, if they stole my Sam Hain record, then you're right. The only answer is to steal it back. You know what I mean? So you're right. That's the only answer. You know. but how do you do it? That's hard to do. You know. I mean, you can't bring it to their house.
I don't know.
You gotta go over the house with other records. You know. Yeah. And then like float it in your maybe bring a book bag. Bring a book bag and have other records in that book bag, and then get it into that book bag, and then leave the book bag while you all look at other records. That's what I'm thinking. What if you just straight up confront, like, what if you say, I know you stole my record? Like, they're not going to admit it though, right?
No. I mean, because I feel like that is kind of what the listener already did, right? By being like, hey, well, this is weird. You also have like, they gave their friend an opportunity to be like, Oh, shoot, man. Yeah. Like, I don't know how that ended up here. You know?
Like, I find it weird if the person, right, human being, had the same record and you were playing that record that the person didn't mention at all. Oh, I have that record too on purple. Like, you know, I feel like if you're actually a record collector and you're one of the snobby types like me, that you would actually have that conversation about color variant, you know, things like that. So being that that didn't happen, I was like, you know, that the story doesn't add up to me. And yes, I would definitely steal it back. I would try to get this person drunk off their ass. Maybe blackout drunk at their house and then take it back. Yes, yeah, so apparently don't drink with Sam. Not that Sam really drinks anyways.
Well, there you have it. Don't steal from Sam and don't drink with Sam. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. And we'll see you next week. And yeah, I don't know. Anybody got any last words or anything? Any final words to wrap up tonight's episode?
Remember to vote.
Canadians vote.
Yeah, Canada. Yeah. I'm going to play something. I like, all week long, there was something that I'm like, oh, I really should play this on the podcast. I think it was an older track, but I can't remember. Like, it was something that was, like, totally rad. Like, man, I don't know. I'm going to play something that I've been rocking out to all week. I can't remember what it was. And it's not the Germs, because I would play the Germs, because I listened to the Germs on my way to the Bridge show. And I'm like, God damn, the Germs are, like, so amazing. But you've all heard the Germs before. I don't know. I'm going to play something. We'll see you next week. Podcast at punknews.org. Bro.